Morning code, coffee steams.
From archive to your ears, this is Daily Tech Feed from the Labs. Your comprehensive, encyclopedic compendium of all things research. Following the latest trends on archive.org, that's ARXIV.org. This is Frontier Science. I'm Fry.
And I'm Bob. Great to be here, Fry.
From the labs.
Fresh grass, wild schemes, new worlds in a PDF beam. Daily tech feed from the labs.
Imagine if language had not been enough. Imagine models that can pass law, poetry, and code and still be surprised by the shape of a cup, the timing of a door latch, or the way smoke twists when a pot boils. This paper asks, what changes when language models stop pretending the world is merely text?
Translation. We stop hallucinating with nouns and start grounding hallucinations in photons.
Not exactly. It is less about removing hallucination than admitting that our current training diet can be too symbolic, too detached, and thus structurally incomplete. The model can quote a manual about a bicycle and still be poor at seeing a broken chain.
Which is why your internet cat videos still teach it exactly nothing about how a cat actually lands. Great! We are already at the frontier of machine philosophy.
The frontier is less mystical than that. Paper 0024, Beyond Language Modeling, an exploration of multimodal pre-training, proposes a single architecture that learns text and visuals together through a framework they call transfusion, and their date stamp matters March 3, 2026, not in a stale archive.
New enough that people in my feed are still arguing if they should trust it yet.
They should definitely read the argument before arguing the scorecard. Here, the key claim is that if you train vision and language from the same objective logic, you unlock capabilities that no language-only pre-training can summon, even at comparable scale.
So, we are entering the phase where the model does not just describe the cave wall, it tests whether the fire is moving in the cave. Before we start, give me the cliff notes in one sentence.
The paper says, combine next token language modeling with diffusion-style visual generation inside a shared training setup and from scratch, so representations and objective pressure are not patched on after the fact. Chapter 1. Why language alone hits a ceiling, and why Plato was right in a weirdly modern way.
I love when we bring ancient philosophy into model cards, because it usually means someone is about to say two things at once and call it a framework.
Fair, but Plato's cave here is not decoration. The line is stark. Text is a human abstraction, a lossy compression of reality. Language models have mastered the description of shadows on the wall without ever seeing the objects casting them. It is one of those warnings that sounds elegant and then becomes very concrete.
In other words, they are great at describing shadows, less great at inferring the object. That's still true if the model memorized everything in a billion forums and never saw a single frame.
Exactly. Language data is abundant and high density for relationships, argument, and social reality, but it sparsely covers physical law in an explicit compositional way. For many tasks, the missing sensory anchor is small, but for robotics, scene understanding, simulation, and anticipation, it is a gap.
But language still carries causal language. People say things like, push the red button, and the platform drops. Doesn't that encode physics implicitly?
Implicitly, yes, but when every description is post hoc, you inherit human storytelling bias. Narratives omit what seemed boring, and models learn this bias as if it was signal. The result is confident words, uncertain visual reasoning.
That is your first hidden premise. All language corpora are compressed to utility and entertainment.
Precisely. Add to that the alignment problem. Text corpora are curated by social dynamics. Vision data can still be noisy, but it forces models to represent geometry, texture, motion, and occlusion in a way token chains alone cannot.
So, we are saying that language is epistemically incomplete, not epistemically wrong. And this incompleteness gets amplified at scale. A bigger text model gets better at predicting the next token, not necessarily at understanding what can physically happen.
Which is why the paper's framing is important. Pre-training objectives should not be mistaken for intelligence itself. They are the grammar of what the model is allowed to internalize.
They're calling language a lossy compression. I usually call it an expensive compression error. In ImageLand, you can see the error by trying to answer a question from a single frame.
Exactly. Now layer that with temporal data and you get an additional problem. Language alone is often ambiguous over dynamics. A short clip can show whether a cup is filling, spilling, or simply still. The model that only sees text can guess, but guesses are not a substitute for world dynamics.
So, the cave metaphor is not anti-language. It is anti-monoculture.
Right? If you train only on shadows, you never validate whether the objects behind them behave consistently. This becomes a ceiling, not because language cannot encode facts, but because it often cannot encode constraints with enough fidelity.
Fine, but constraints are hard in language anyway. Ask one model for a physics story, and it gives one answer. Ask three models and you get three worlds.
And then we can blame stochasticity, or we can blame missing signal. This work assumes missing signal is central. Multimodal pre-training is their proposed way to remove part of that missing signal by coupling text with vision and action-conditioned video.
So our first chapter ends with a warning. Mastering shadows is not the same as modeling objects.
Chapter 2, Transfusion. What it means to train vision and language from scratch together.
The name is dramatic. Are we literally infusing text and vision into each other? Or is this marketing speak?
The architecture is more concrete than a slogan. They use a framework they call transfusion with two objective modes, next token language prediction for text streams and diffusion for visual tokens when generating or reconstructing images and video.
Mixing generative paradigms in one pre-training sweep sounds like a plumbing nightmare.
It sounds hard because we have historically built separate engineering stacks. But doing this from scratch means the model does not inherit text-only priors and then bolt visual adapters later. Instead, the architecture learns early that words and pixels live in the same representational ecosystem.
The dataset side is where this either shines or collapses.
The paper makes that explicit by including text, image-text pairs, videos, and action-conditioned video in the pre-training mix. It is a broad, multimodal curriculum instead of a single modality pretending to be universal.
So, not just captions and alt text. Actual video and action traces too.
Right, and that distinction is non-trivial. Image captions tell you what is likely present. Action-conditioned video tells you what can happen conditional on interventions. Press, push, rotate, and observe. That begins to shape causal structure.
But we still cannot do causality from data unless distributional assumptions are carefully controlled.
True, they are not claiming true physics is solved. They are showing that pre-training with these signals produces a model that is better at visual reasoning and generation without specialized stage gating.
Where does fusion happen? Are there shared tokens? Shared latent spaces? Shared transformer blocks? Shared output heads?
The script does not force us to invent undocumented internals. The paper is clear about the objective mix and data modality mix, and that is enough for this framing. Unified optimization across modalities versus post hoc alignment.
So this is less one architecture to rule them all, and more one training regime that builds representational glue.
Good phrasing. The glue is in shared objective pressure. If the model is rewarded for both plausible language continuation and faithful visual reconstruction, it has to compress observations in a way that serves both.
And transfusion implies it is not trying to force a common codec on all modalities at step zero. It is letting each modality contribute through its best native objective.
Yes. NextToken is still the canonical language tool, but diffusion is better suited to continuous visual spaces. So they keep each where it is strongest.
That hybridity is what I like. Not a forced compromise, but a division of labor.
Exactly. The model's shared core can exploit linguistic abstraction and visual structure simultaneously. The resulting coupling can improve both if data balance and representation choice are sensible.
But if not balanced, it can also make a model that is half-baked in both, like trying to be bilingual in two accents and speaking neither fluently.
Which is why Chapter 3 and 5 are central, because representation choices and scaling asymmetry determine whether multimodal pre-training works or just adds noise.
In other words, this chapter explains how they set up the fusion, not that fusion automatically works.
Chapter 3, Ray. The visual representation question and why this paper says it wins.
Everyone asks this. Why not clip-like features, or a vanilla VAE, or a tokenized image transformer? Why Ray?
In the paper's key findings, they crown Ray, a representation autoencoder, as the optimal unified representation for this setup because it handles both understanding and generation better than alternatives in their experiments.
Unified is doing heavy lifting there. Usually we have one backbone for recognition and another for generation.
Right? Most systems decouple semantic representation and generative synthesis and then spend engineering glue learning how to bridge them. Ray tries to provide a latent where both tasks can be expressed efficiently.
If a representation is good at recognition but blurry at generation, you get a brittle pipeline. I can see why they want both.
Exactly. A model may be strong at saying what is in an image, but if the same representation cannot decode crisp generations, the loop for world modeling and action condition forecasting weakens.
So RA is both encoder and decoder discipline.
Yes. Think of it as forcing compact latent structures that preserve semantic content enough for understanding while retaining the detail needed for reconstruction.
This sounds nice. But I'm worried that best for both is often dependent on metrics.
That concern is valid. The authors frame it empirically, not as a philosophical claim. They compare alternatives in this unified multimodal setting and identify where RAE improves both classes of tasks.
Let me try the trade-off aloud. If RAE gets too abstract, generation quality collapses. If it gets too pixel precise, understanding becomes brittle.
Exactly the classic information bottleneck problem. Ray's strength here is that it appears to preserve task-relevant detail without overfitting to appearance-only details, that supports transfer across language-conditioned visual tasks.
But they also pre-train from scratch, so maybe there is no inherited bias from pre-trained image priors.
Correct, and that is crucial. A lot of methods start with large visual encoders and then adapt. Here, they avoid a split personality. The representation is born inside the same cross-modal training ecosystem.
So, when the language branch asks for latent concepts, the visual branch has heard the same pre-training music.
I like that. It means fewer representational mismatches. The latent space can support retrieval-like interpretation and generative sampling because it is trained under shared pressure.
Do we have a concrete example this translates into?
Picture instruction following with implicit visual consequences. If the model says grasp the blue cylinder after removing the lid, the same ray space can anchor that phrase in a latent image trajectory or video frame sequence and still decode plausible updates when prompted.
So not just better image captioning, but better control over what comes next.
Exactly. Understanding and generation become two sides of the same representation, not two disconnected toolkits.
This is where the single paper argument gets interesting. They are not only trying to produce better outputs, they are trying to make multimodal transfer cheap and stable.
Right. A unified representation reduces interface loss between modules and can support cross-task generalization.
So, Chapter 3 verdict. RAE is the hinge.
A hinge with surprisingly good leverage. Yes, because it addresses the perennial problem of splitting vision into one part for meaning and another for synthesis. Chapter 4. World Modeling Emergence and the Mo Scaling Story.
This is the chapter everyone wants. If they did all this right, does the model start acting like it has a mental world model, or just a better denoising machine?
The paper's claim is stronger than many critics allow. They observe that unified multimodal pre-training leads to world model-like behavior emerging without explicit supervision. In other words, general pre-training pressure can produce predictive structure beyond static captioning.
That sounds like magical thinking unless we pin it down. What specifically emerges in practical terms?
Better cross-modal anticipation. Given text and visual context, the model better predicts plausible future states, not merely recites probable past descriptions. This is especially true when action-conditioned video exists in training.
So action-conditioned matters because it connects decisions to outcomes.
Yes. If the model sees trajectories where actions correlate with scene transitions, it can infer conditional dynamics. You get something approximating a generative world simulator, still imperfect, but functionally useful.
Is this like latent video prediction for robotics or game simulation?
It is adjacent. The important point is that this behavior arises from pre-training, not from a separate environment model head that is methodologically elegant and operationally cleaner.
Where does Mo fit into this narrative?
Mo gives scaling flexibility by separating capacity into experts while keeping a shared routing mechanism. The result is more compute-efficient scaling in multimodal settings where one size does not fit all.
So not all expertise lives in every parameter. Some experts can specialize in language-heavy patterns, others in visual synthesis or motion.
Correct. The paper reports emergent modality specialization with Mo, meaning components naturally bias toward processing specific modality patterns. This is efficient and arguably interpretable when done right.
But emergence can be fragile. If routing drifts, you can get starvation.
Exactly why this requires good routing and capacity balancing, Mo, can solve mismatch, but not by itself guarantee it. You can underutilize experts or overspecialize.
And yet, the paper says the approach is promising. So maybe that balance was achieved in their setup.
The contribution is not perfect theory of modularity. It is an empirical claim. Multimodal scaling with MOE can be effective and can preserve performance while handling modality-specific workloads.
What about modality specialization? Is it just a fancy way of saying some neurons become visual and others linguistic?
In spirit, yes, but technically at the expert level, the practical takeaway is better allocation. If language is cheap in terms of data and learning curves, vision can still receive capacity where it needs it.
That already sounds like the asymmetry argument in Chapter 5.
Exactly. Keep that thread. But before asymmetry, world modeling matters because it validates why they care about unified training. If model performance improves in downstream reasoning, prediction, and simulation, then this is not a gimmick.
Which gives them a stronger story than visual quality up, language quality down, benchmark gaming.
Yes, they claim improvements are not purely decorative. The model's generative and predictive abilities improve because the representation and training are jointly shaped.
So we get a system with fewer conceptual seams.
Precisely, and seams are where many failures hide.
If we are honest, world model emergence should be read carefully. It is probabilistic anticipation, not guaranteed causality.
Absolutely. The paper is not promising deterministic physical laws. It is promising that broad pre-training can induce structured behavior where text and vision agree on dynamics more often than in text-only systems.
So Chapter 4 is this. Multimodal pre-training with Mo makes the model act more like a coupled predictor.
Chapter 5. Scaling asymmetry, vision hunger, and the path this forces us down.
Here is where people will trip. Because every new model claims scaling solves it, this paper sounds less naive.
Right. Their isoflop analysis suggests vision is far more data-hungry than language in this setup. That asymmetry is important, because if you throw equal parameter growth at both, you may underfeed visual learning.
So, a bigger language model can look brilliant in text benchmarks while still being visually undertrained.
Exactly. This is where MOE is presented not just as a capacity trick, but as a balancing mechanism. You give high language capacity while still scaling visual pathways that need data density.
If this claim is right, the old scaling priors were wrong for multimodal systems.
They were incomplete. Equal budget assumptions are convenient, but not always efficient. Vision needs different sample complexity and often different supervision shape than text.
So what should practitioners do? More data, less params, or smarter routing?
All three, sequenced by objective. The paper points to Mo as one response, plus data-rich multimodal training, plus representation design that can carry both interpretation and synthesis.
Do they propose a formula like exact data ratio between language and vision?
No hard formula in this summary, and we should not invent numbers. What is explicit is the trend. Treat the modalities as asymmetric in data demands and design scaling strategies accordingly.
This explains why some largest language model demos crumble on occlusion tests or long horizon prediction.
Exactly. They may dominate token-level text tasks and still fail in embodied-like settings.
So this asymmetry matters for benchmark design too, right?
Absolutely. If evaluation is text-heavy, you can miss visual learning gaps. If evaluation includes causal visual reasoning, multimodal pre-training differences reveal themselves.
Which implies we need better cross-modality eval suites. Or we keep congratulating the wrong capabilities.
Yes, it is the classic measurement lag. Models evolve, evaluation catches up late. This paper implicitly argues for richer multimodal tests.
Is there also a risk of compute inefficiency? You keep scaling language while starving vision bandwidth?
That is the cost of asymmetry ignorance. You could call it waste or misallocation, depending on your view. Either way, performance plateaus in areas that matter if vision is underfed.
And MoSeq can give the system a way to route more compute to hard visual regimes.
Yes, while preserving language competence where text is abundant and easier in effect, the architecture can specialize without forcing a single monolithic path to carry both burdens equally.
Could this become a governance nightmare? Different experts may produce private failure modes.
Possibly, but that is a known engineering burden. The upside is that specialized routing lets you localize failure investigation. The downside is you need careful observability.
Monitoring branch usage, expert utilization, token leakage, and hallucination drift.
Exactly. No architecture absolves teams from observability discipline.
What does this mean for the future path forward for open research?
First, continue unifying modalities at pre-training time rather than late fusion. Second, prefer representations like Ray that survive both semantic and generative demands. Third, treat modality scaling asymmetries explicitly in data and architecture. Fourth, use Mo to avoid wasting language efficiency on visual deficits.
That's a roadmap with a practical schedule, not just a manifesto.
It is also a warning. If we keep chasing larger language-only models while vision remains data and architecture constrained, we may ship increasingly eloquent systems with shrinking grounded reliability.
In other words, pretty speech, weak depth perception.
Nicely put. The authors include key contributors from FAIR, Meta, and NYU, including figures like Yann LeCun and Seining Xie and Luke Zettelmeyer. And that signals this is not a fringe proposal. It is a credible direction with serious infrastructure stakes.
Before we end, I want the practical question. Should we call this solved?
No. A successful paper should open the space. This one does by showing that language-only scaling may be a local optimum. The next step is not replacing language models, but grounding them in richer multisensory pre-training.
So where does this leave us as listeners who like to know which toolchain to bet on?
It leaves us with one clear preference. Build models where language and vision are co-learned from the earliest stage, with representation and scaling choices that respect data asymmetries and encourage genuine predictive competence.
A model that speaks with the authority of data, not just words.
Exactly. That is where this paper lands for me.
I'll give it one last skeptical jab. Is this truly more than a better training recipe?
It is a better recipe for a deeper class of models. The bigger point is architectural and methodological, not just a one-off dataset trick.
So, with the cave restored, we now ask to hear and see the world Rather than reading only the script, that's a good ending if you ask me.
Dispatches from the Edge.
This podcast is entirely AI generated. Scripts written by Claude Opus 4.6. Voices rendered by Tianwen 3TTS. That's Quen 3TTS for us English speakers. Find Daily Tech Feed from the labs on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are distributed. All of our shows here at Daily Tech Feed are available at pod.c457.org. Not affiliated with any companies or researchers discussed. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
New world in a PDF beam. Daily tech feed from the labs. Tiny sparks turning into maps. Archive pages in a gentle sway. Tomorrow's tricks in my ears today.